Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Win Tucson. I am joined by Lisa Von Geldren, and we are going to kind of talk about what's going on. But before we get there, the show is designed to solve problems and bring solutions to everyday concerns. And we have no shortage of everyday concerns, and we have no shortage of problems. I'm really looking for solutions, and hopefully we will get some. Arizona held hostage, day 22, the election that will not go away. You know, Groundhog Day at least was fun. Bill Murray got up, he would go get a meal, he would jump in the puddle, not jump in the puddle, he would do things. He knew he was in Groundhog Day. I don't know if we're willingly here or unwillingly here, but we certainly, it's like a bad movie. I feel like the Halloween series, like Halloween edition 13 or something. So Lisa, thanks for joining me this morning. Right before we came in here, you got a notice about that Secretary of State Katie Hobbs may have violated the law. So,
well multiple times.
This is a new one, though.
Yes.
Not through corruption or fraud or miscounting or unplugging machines or spiriting ballots away. None of that. We're not talking about that. But what is this particular thing?
Well, if you go look up Arizona Revised Statute Section 38-503, any public officer or an employee who has or whose relative has a substantial interest in any decision of a public agency shall make known such interest in the official records of such public agency and shall refrain from participating in any manner as an officer or employee in such decision. You know, that sounds to me like anyone who's Secretary of State can't run for governor.
Or would have to resign to run, or would have had to wall herself off.
Yes.
From the, at the minimum, wall herself off from the decision or the process of the ballots.
Yep.
And I don't believe any of that happened.
None of that happened that I'm aware of. She didn't even debate. So she avoided doing anything that a responsible candidate would to let us know where she stands on the issues, how she intends to govern. Not that we can't infer greatly from her behavior, but she violated the law over and over. And that's not who I want leading our state. That's not how I want our state led.
But right now, according to the vote totals that we are being told, Maricopa County certified. Now there's a legal process. Cochise County, God bless Cochise County, holding out. Although I do believe by the end of this week they will be legally forced. Did you hear about Mojave County and Ron Gould's statement that he was voting yes against his will because he did not want to be charged with a felony and did not want to be put in jail? Does that seem, where is that in the Constitution?
That's nowhere in the Constitution. We are supposed to be able to vote or make decisions based on our own best judgment and not be under duress. It's kind of like a shotgun wedding, right? It doesn't hold any water. You'll get an annulment for that easily. So,
can we get an annulment on our election?
I sure as heck wish. I honestly am. I'm so worried about our state. You know, I spoke at the third annual Health and Freedom Summit this weekend.
Yes,
was held, and it was fantastic. We had Dr. Jane Orient. We had some really fabulous people. Carl Kanthak from up in Washington. He's fantastic. He's called the Data Dude. And and we had some really great people. And the thing that's so concerning is that people are so asleep. They're still asleep in the face of the onslaught of government tyranny. And
so what made the conference great? And then talk about the tyranny.
Well, meeting these people, listening to these people, Dr. Jane Orient, the one thing that she said that just kind of flooded my body with relief, honestly. So we were talking about the COVID mandates and the social credit score system that
Yes, geez.
The powers that be are trying to roll into our country. And if you look around Tucson, and Russ Witte's been at the forefront of trying to educate people and fight this, you will see all these smaller cell towers, and they're all about, I don't know, 300 feet apart or whatever. But it's basically to create a digital gulag. And you will have your phone, and if you're a bad person, you're not going to be able to shop, buy, or leave certain areas. And they're doing this now in China, and they intend this for us, free Americans. And I'm wondering where the heck the Constitution went. Russ Witte said that the Board of Supervisors, or someone in power who is supposed to be able to agree or disagree to contracts from Verizon and all the rest of them, was told by them that they cannot not agree to the contracts to put up these towers. That's astonishing.
So who is providing these towers? And why? And there's no choice? They were just told.
It's the 5G.
Okay.
It's the Internet of Things and the Internet of Bodies. So you will be tracked and traced. I mean, we're already carrying them around with us.
I know, and I'm going to be devil's advocate here. I know that when we're looking for missing children, and knowing who they went with, or knowing that helping find missing people, these are very valuable. On the other hand, if I don't want to be tracked, is there a way to program my phone or
no? So even if you think you've turned it off, it's not off.
Right, and I actually have people that even if the phone's turned off can track because they have that ability. We use it for good, but I understand where it could be used for bad. So what else did you, because we got about a minute before the break.
Jane Orient said,
yes,
what they're not understanding, and think about this, folks, you know, they keep trying to put us into green energy, right? There's never going to be enough solar or wind power to support the amount of energy we use. And
so is it a way to funnel money to another group of people?
Well, get this. Their system sucks up tons of power. Their system ultimately will fail because they won't have the power to run it.
So we've got that to worry about.
No, that's good.
Oh, good.
I mean, we'll all be freezing cold or sweating because we won't be able to run our air conditioning because there won't be enough power. It'll be like Northern California. That's where I moved from, to Arizona. And the rolling
blackouts.
So what
you're saying is California is going to come to Arizona very shortly.
Absolutely. I'm so sad.
All right. Well, on that happy note, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Lisa von Gelderen, and I'm Kathleen Wynn, and you're hearing 10:30 a.m. The Voice, and you are with Kathleen Wynn and Wynn Tucson. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn, and we are talking about the election because it doesn't seem to want to end. I do have a request. So if you know of something that happened on Election Day, I don't care what county, I'm going to ask you to email it to me at KathleenWynn@WynnTucson.us. There are four different teams of lawyers working. They're looking for unique stories. So if you went to the polling place, your ballot didn't get scanned, you were turned away, you were told to get out of line, you were sent to another polling place, whatever happened to you on Election Day and we're looking specifically at Election Day, that was not in accordance with the law. And if you're unsure, send it to me anyway. So that's Kathleen Wynn, KathleenWynn, Wynn, WINN, at Wynn, WINN, Tucson.us. We are gathering these up. There is a legal period we'll be entering. We'll talk about that at the end of this next break with someone who used to work in the Secretary of State's office and work at the Attorney General's office. So it's important that we capture everything that has happened so that we can create a record. That is how judges and legal proceedings, they're unemotional. They're just people giving affidavits saying this is what happened. It is a slow legal process, is not quick. It is not a drive-through like McDonald's. You don't get a Happy Meal. But hopefully we can create a strong enough case so that although elections have been certified, there's still a whole legal process that occurs after that. And we need to be aware that that process will start as soon as everything is certified. So, Lisa, I make that point because people get emotional. They get upset. There's a lot of depressed people around not understanding how we got here. So you are very much a constitutionalist. You are very much a legal person, and not that you're a lawyer, but that you understand the laws.
My parents wanted me to go to law school. I didn't want to spend my life fighting.
And here you are.
And here I am. Apparently. It's like, I should have gone to law school. Sorry, Mom and Dad.
You were right. I hate when that happens. Life lessons.
Kids, so, listen to your mom and dad.
Always, always, yes. Even when you think your mom is extra. Some of my kids, they love me, but. All right, so.
Gee.
Imagine that. So anyway, what are you hearing? What are you doing right now in your capacity? I know John Birch can't really be political, right?
So, Nope. I'm nonpartisan, baby. I'm nonpartisan. I'm on the side of the Constitution, though.
And how's
and I'm
the
on the side of the people. And I am on the side of freedom under the law. And the laws have been violated.
So give me a law that you believe has been violated.
Well, the one we just talked about. The Title 38.
Conflict of interest.
But the other thing is Michael Schaefer, who owns an accredited test lab.
And we've had him on several times.
He's wonderful, and he's been talking about the fact that since 2018, the equipment has not been certified to be used in an election. I've known since early 2000s that those machines can flip votes. They can be manipulated. Let's face it, those same machines are made by the same people who put the machines in the casinos. The house always wins.
So you're telling me that the three cherries,
yes,
are the same equipment,
yes,
that runs our elections.
And then there's been, I don't know how much research by corporations like Rand and others that, and the CIA is involved in the development of Facebook, right?
Right.
So they know that when I post a picture of me and my kids or me on a horse or whatever it is, and I get those likes, they know that translates to a dopamine squirt in my brain, really. And it creates an addiction. And that's why technology has infiltrated us so deeply and so completely. People are always, I don't know how many times a day they look at their phones. There's studies on that.
I've not been able to look at my phone much, but I will tell you that it is an addiction. And
it's a distraction from what we should be paying attention to, folks.
It's a distraction. I do not disagree. What's a solution? Besides not looking at our phones, what is the solution for the immediate set of problems that we find ourselves in right now? What should we be doing right now?
Oh, I don't want to be the person trying to say what we should be doing because it'll get me in trouble.
Okay.
But I do think, you know,
from the Constitution, though, from the Constitution, if there's violations of the Constitution, what do we do?
Well, we need to enforce the rule of law, but nobody's doing it. The attorneys aren't doing it. Even the judiciary seems to have been compromised. So I would point people back to, you can look up, people say, my father, I love my father, he's brilliant. But you talk to him about the elections being, no, they wouldn't do that. They've been doing this for decades. Go back, folks.
I grew
folks.
Up outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
I don't even, dead people have been voting forever.
Well, it's not just the dead people. Go back and read, oh my gosh, I've forgotten the name of it, Athens, Tennessee, in the 40s, when the men came home from war. And they had to come to where the ballots were being held with guns and secure the ballots and count them because they were being stolen. Men had to stand up. And I'm calling you men, stand up for your wives, your children, your families, our country. Stand up. do the right thing. Don't just go to work and think someone else is going to handle it, because they're not handling it. They're stealing it from all of us.
So this is going to have to play out, and it's not comfortable. And we don't inherently as human beings like conflict.
No.
And the divide between Republicans and Democrats, and maybe independents too, but the divide has been there. And I think the growing number of independents is an indication that people are just saying, I don't want to be part of it. And so now we find ourselves with results that are questionable, and not, I think, just as an outside observer of Maricopa County and what's transpired since Election Day till now, just an ounce of humility by the Board of Supervisors would have gone a long way. It seems to me that they are emboldened, they are cavalier, they are aggressive.
They have to be. They have to be, because they've committed treason. And as if you've watched any of these proceedings, they've been called out publicly because people know that the consequences of being guilty of treason is death. And people are talking that to them openly. So of course they're cavalier. Of course they're not honest. They're terrified on the one hand and smug on the other hand, I think, that they've gotten away with it, or that they're going to be able to get away with it.
So they're wearing their smugness on the outside and they're keeping their terrified tucked in? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
It's one way to handle it. I also thought it was interesting that Stephen Richer kind of said, hey, this wasn't me. This was the supervisors. They removed elections from the recorder's office.
Oh yeah, he doesn't, I mean, it's
so is that posturing?
It's pointing the finger to try and get the blame and the attention off of himself. We don't know the truth. We can't know the truth because they're all trying to cover themselves.
Who's responsible for the voter rolls? Is that the recorder?
You know, I think it's the recorder, the county recorder.
Right.
Right? Aren't they responsible for that? Isn't Gabriella responsible for that here in Pima?
Yeah, and I heard that between the primary and the general that we added 60,000 voters in Pima County. Did we register 60,000 voters between the primary and the general election?
I'd like to go get a peek.
I wonder if there's a way to do that. So I am trying to just take an assessment of what's happening. So I know that there's people that are looking to see what they can do to set aside this election or at least get a revote. Is there a legal path constitutionally to get a revote? Are you aware of such a thing?
No.
So
I don't know of a path. I don't know. That doesn't mean it's not possible. But I don't think that our founders ever foresaw it going this far.
That the corruption would be so big.
Correct. They you know, and they said our Constitution was made for a moral people. And then you hear Glenn Beck a couple of weeks ago coming out against a constitutional convention, and he said, because we're no longer those people. We're no longer a moral people. Our culture has corrupted so far. You know, one of my favorite media people ever, and the only public figure I ever mourned his death, right, was Andrew Breitbart.
Oh, got it.
Andrew Breitbart said, politics is downstream from culture, right? Our culture is why our political situation is such a mess. Integrity, honor, doing the right thing, they're mocked and scorned now. People want to get the best deal for themselves and screw everybody else. Excuse my language.
No, but it's okay. If that's the worst we say, I think we can stay on the air. I am disheartened by what I believe is a fraudulent scheme to defraud the voters of Arizona for the election. It isn't even about the outcome. It is about the way in which the election was conducted and the way in which there is no responsibility or ownership for that. So We will be back right after these messages. You're listening to Kathleen Wynn and Lisa Von Geldren on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. This is Wynn Tucson trying to sort out the 2022 general election in Arizona. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn, and we are with Lisa Von Geldren, and we are talking about what's happening in Arizona. So Maricopa County Superior Court judge ruled yesterday that Republican Attorney General candidate Abe Hamadeh and the Republican National Committee have to come back to court with their lawsuit after the state certifies election results, so that their lawsuit was prematurely filed. And there had been some concern about that. Now, interestingly enough, Hamadeh and the RNC have not alleged any fraud, manipulation, or other intentional wrongdoing that would impugn the outcomes of the November 8 general election. However, they do claim that the election was rife with gross incompetence and mismanagement. And so what I want to know is, you know, what level of gross incompetence and mismanagement rises up to intentional wrongdoing? I think it's a very fine line.
I think it's a very polite way of saying deceit. You know, I was talking with some people, and we can't call what went on fraud, because that brings in the FBI or whatever. We have to call it maladministration. The election was run with maladministration. It was not administered properly. And so that way we can keep it within the state to correct it. But when we start using certain language,
yes,
it takes it out of our control.
And the language is very specific. The election was afflicted with certain errors, inaccuracies, and mismanagement of polling places. Garrett Archer. I just did that. I'll tell Garrett about that later. Garrett Archer is called in, and Garrett worked with me at the Attorney General's office and then worked at the Secretary of State's office. Garrett, thank you for calling in this morning. And welcome.
Hi, Kathleen.
Welcome to Wynn Tucson. I saw you on in a television interview, and I couldn't even tell you where, and maybe you know, but you were talking about the process. And I think a lot of people are confused, they're emotional, and the process is neither confusing nor emotional. And I was hoping you could let my listeners know once what has to happen and the dates and the timeline. And there can be lawsuits. We were just talking about before you came on that the courts have ruled that Abe Hamadeh's lawsuit was premature. So if you would kind of walk us through from here, November 30th, I believe that by December 10th, I think that's when all legal challenges have to be filed. So, but from today till there, what does that look like in Arizona?
So right now, as everyone in Arizona probably knows, we are waiting on Cochise County. There's a bit of a legal situation with the board wanting to wait to certify, and with the Secretary of State's office, as well as some third parties, filing lawsuits to compel the board to sign the certification. Now, the certification is not a discretionary vote. They have to sign that certification for the canvass to canvass the election, because as the court said to Hamadeh, the lawsuits cannot proceed until there is a state canvass. And so the state cannot do its job until all 15 counties canvass. And then once the state canvasses, it can come. The law is that the state must canvass by 30 days after the election. So December 8th is actually the absolute deadline. And then lawsuit and challenges to the canvass can happen for 5 days after that. So actually, it's a little later than the 10th if the canvass happens on the 8th. And then that's when we would expect to see Hamadeh's lawsuit be refiled in the courts, and then it should proceed as normal at that point.
So Garrett, Cochise County, because you brought it up, let's say they certify this week. Let's say they are compelled and they understand they don't want to. One of the things that started all this is they wanted to do a hand count. Are they mutually exclusive? Could they do a hand count and then certify and then do a hand count? What precludes them from getting to, because I think what they're trying to say is we want to make sure that this was done with complete integrity. And we may disagree with their method of getting there, but I think that's what they're trying to accomplish.
Sure. Well, the reason, so they did want to do a hand count. The reason that they were not able to do a hand count is because there is no explicit ability for a county to order a hand count in law right now. So if obviously everyone remembers the Maricopa audit from 2021. That was done via subpoena power from the legislature. So the legislature sort of took the, you know, they subpoenaed the ballots from Maricopa County, and then they were able to do a hand count after that. And that was outside of sort of the legal statutes of that actually administer the election. So the problem Cochise had is they were looking at doing a hand count at the time of the, you know, when the election was in place. And there are several things that sort of keep that from happening. A, like I said, in statute, you're not, you know, we don't have anything saying we're allowed to do full hand counts. And then also there is a something called the Purcell rule. I'm sure you know Helen Purcell.
Yes.
And that is actually a legally binding rule in which changes to election administration can't happen when it's too close to an election. So that will thing that if the legislature wants to entertain allowing counties to do a hand count, they sort of have to move this next year in this next legislative session, because that would give counties time to prepare, adjust the election procedures manual, and also sort of put rules around how a full hand place instead of just sort of, you know, having someone write up a quick document and say, okay, this is how we're going to do a hand count. They want to make sure that if there is a full hand count, it's done according to a very standardized set of rules.
So to that point, on election day in Maricopa County, a lot of rules or procedures kind of got just dropped in. Box three, garbage bags with zip ties, other ways to transport ballots, the scanner's not working. So there was kind of an adapt to the circumstance mode that isn't in any manual, kind of people made it up as they went along. Does that violate the manual or the statutes in Arizona? And does that in any way negate the election that we just had? Well, and I realize always, that's going to become a legal question, right? So I'm not expecting you to give me a legal opinion, by the way.
Very loyally there. So there are always contingency plans in place. For example, one of the reasons why Cochise could not do a hand count is because they already had a contingency plan in place with other counties. So if, for example, if your election equipment breaks down, like really breaks down and is sort of beyond repair, then you have a contingency plan with other counties in which you can visit the ballots to that county and have them count and use their machines. And that's in place with every single county. They always have a contingency plan. Door three is actually a contingency plan that Maricopa County did have in place. I don't know anything about the zip tie, the bag thing. I know that's something that people have been saying. I honestly don't know, so I can't really comment. You know, I have no knowledge.
You don't have any knowledge of that. I get it. Yeah.
I really don't. I honestly don't. But the door, all I know is that the door three is a contingency plan in place if there is a problem with those tabulators.
And there was clearly problems with the tabulators on election day.
There was clearly problems with, it wasn't actually the tabulators. Ironically, the tabulators did exactly what they were supposed to do. What happened was the printers, there are these, the Oki printers are a brand of printer, the heat fusers sort of broke down. And what happened was when those heat fusers broke down and they weren't printing the ink properly on the ballots, when people went to go feed the ballot into the tabulator could not read what's called the timing marks, which is that's the barcodes on the side of the ballot that tell the tabulator where the ballot belongs, which precinct, which races it's supposed to be tabulating for. Because, you know, as you know, because of school districts and city boundaries, precincts are not, you know, even though precincts are sort of the lowest number that the states tabulate to for legislative and congressional districts, there are multiple precinct parts And so you need these timing marks to say, okay, this person, this ballot is supposed to be tabulated for, I don't know, Higley School District or, you know, Sierra Vista or whatever. And what happened was the tabulator simply could not determine where the ballot was coming from, so it kicked it out. And then they brought those ballots to the central count systems, which actually the central count machine uses a completely different process. It doesn't do an optical scan. It does an image scan. And so it was able to read the timing marks. On most of them. I don't actually know the duplicate report yet because that should be coming out shortly. So I do not know how many of those door three ballots were actually duplicated.
Correct. And I think that's the, you know, in a race like Abe Hamadeh's where it's 510 votes, if, I don't know, 5,000 were duplicated, then you have, I think then that's where you have some questions of concern. There was some of the testimony, there was talk of ballots that had been counted commingled with ballots that hadn't been counted. And I think that's why there's, just if you hear that as someone who's an intelligent person, you think, well, then how is this count? How can we trust this count? And I think that's what.
Sure. Yeah. When you hear that, I heard that too. I saw those affidavits in which someone said that there were door three ballots that were commingled with all the already tabulated ballots. And that is absolutely a concern. And that is something that, you know, now that the data will begin to be public, we'll be able to see a lot of this data. We should be able to do a better reconciliation of these ballots. Because, as you know, elections are just a massive accounting problem. You know, you want to make sure that the number of people that verified to vote and checked in to vote matches the number of ballots that were tabulated. And if four or three ballots were commingled and were either retabulated and there were more ballots tabulated than there should have, or they were less ballots tabulated than there should have, then we should, at very soon, be able to see what that check-in number is versus the number of ballots tabulated and see if there is a major discrepancy there.
That's great. So, Garrett, we have to take a short break. Can you stay with us? The break's about a minute 30, and we'll come back. And if I could keep you for just a couple more minutes, I just have a few more questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. You're great. Thank you so much. You're listening to Garrett Archer on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. This is Kathleen Wynn, and this is Wynn Tucson. We'll be back right after this short break. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. This is Kathleen Wynn, and you're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice. And I've got Garrett Archer on the line. So, Garrett, there are, I think, December 5th is a deadline of some sort. Is it December 5th? Or is it the 8th? You mentioned, so I was given December.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yes, yes, yes.
Sorry.
The statutory deadline to for the state to canvass the election is 30 days after the election. So the December 5th is the day that the state has scheduled to canvass the election. But due to the legal sort of wranglings in Cochise County, it could be pushed back to the 8th. We don't know yet. We just know that is the absolute statutory deadline for the Secretary of State.
Okay, so the 5th was the original deadline, had all this nonsense not happened. And we were just...
Yeah, the 5th was the deadline, the day they wanted to do it, but they can push it back to the 8th if they have. Now, they cannot... Now, again, they cannot canvass without Cochise County. So you will not see a situation... I know it's sort of something that... people have been playing with on social media where, you know, they say, well, you know, Juan Ciscomani would not win if Cochise doesn't canvass. There is no scenario that 47,000 ballots in Arizona do not get counted into the state total. So I will absolutely see that those ballots will be eventually canvassed. However they are, if they're done by compelling the board or
yes,
the Supreme Court taking this up, one of the things is going to happen.
It was Juan Ciscomani and Tom Horn, two people that I know very well.
Tom Horn. And yeah, those numbers will be included in the canvas. However that happens, they will be included.
Okay, good. Good to know that we don't have to worry about that today. Thank you for taking one worry out of my life. I appreciate that. So yesterday, Hamadeh vowed after the court that, you know, he is claiming that 510 votes out of 2.5 million is the closest statewide race in Arizona history. So he's lamenting, imagine if the court had extended voting hours after all the problems for just a few hours. Is that a fair complaint?
I mean, with the trajectory we saw with Hamadeh, obviously the more Election Day ballots for Hamadeh, the better. So as far as the merits of the case, of the complaint, again, that's for sort of election lawyers to decide. Yeah,
exactly.
But as far as the trajectory and the trend lines that were happening on Election Day, yeah, obviously extending voting hours, you know, if more, you know, and again, it's hard to determine. One of the things that's very difficult to determine in an election is to quantify the number of people that, say, would have shown up if they extended the hours to you know, 11 o'clock. We just don't know, of course.
And there were claims that, like, it's 6:40, so 20 to 7, people were told to get out of line and to go home, that they weren't going to get a chance to vote. And you and I both know that the statute doesn't say that. The statute says if you're in line by 7, you get to vote.
Yes.
And so...
Yeah, and again, that's hard to talk to because...
you didn't know.
I know that there are people saying that, but yes, you did this. It's very clear that if you were in line at 7 o'clock, able to vote.
Yes.
And what we do know is that there were, but now what I can say is based off the digital tear sheet data. So Maricopa County does provide digital tear sheet data, which is just people who checked in during the day on Election Day. And there were people that did vote. We do know that that did occur because I have tear sheet data going all the way to 8 o'clock.
So Garrett, you cut out for a second. So I hate to make you repeat that, but could you say, go back to the tear sheet data for Maricopa, then you cut out. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. I said that you know, we do have this data of this public data that shows how many people checked in. It was about 248,000 people in Maricopa that did check in. And we do have data that goes past 7 o'clock where people did check in to vote after 7 o'clock. So wherever I haven't done the analysis as to where those check-ins occurred after 7 o'clock, but there were people that were in line after 7 that did vote. We do know that based off the data.
That's encouraging. It's good to hear. Obviously there's disappointment when your candidate doesn't win. I was one of those candidates in the primary, so I understand personally. But you want to be able to trust the system. You want to be able to know that what happened, and in the primary we had Pinal County who ran out of ballots, right? So, and good for them. They didn't do that this time. So thank God that they're not in the front and center of the dysfunction of Arizona elections, right? I actually called Ken Volkmer that day and told him he was out of the doghouse. I think we have to understand there's going to be lawsuits, and there's going to be lawsuits filed because we know Carrie Lake's going to file one. I'm hearing, you know, obviously Abe's going to bring his back. I'm hearing of two or three others. What happens with those lawsuits as it relates to this election? Do they have to be heard quickly? What's the process, and will they go to the Supreme Court, Arizona Supreme Court? So if you could just kind of walk my listeners through that part of it.
So courts do make it a point to expedite election lawsuits. And so all of these lawsuits will be prioritized and will be heard very quickly after they are filed. There's no question that. Now, of course, the judges will make a determination on standing and merit and all that stuff, but they will be at least heard. There's not going to be a situation in which a lawsuit is filed and then isn't taken up for, say, a month. That's extremely unlikely. So we will see these lawsuits filed. Now, if I had to guess, and based on Hamadeh's lawsuit, I would say one of the biggest things they're going to attempt to do is to rehabilitate provisional ballots. Now, that's a pretty common thing in election, yes, post-election lawsuits, is to try to rehabilitate those provisional ballots because, it's extremely difficult to have ballots thrown out, and it's extremely difficult to have, In fact, I don't even know if there's a situation in which you can have people, people vote that didn't vote. So it's really the pool of ballots that you have access to are provisional ballots. And so that's what the ones that they look at and see if, say, for example, if some of those people checked in Maricopa County and didn't check out and went and voted somewhere else with a provisional ballot. That's one of the things they're going to be researching to see if they can rehabilitate some of those and have them added to the totals.
Well, and I think to Abe's point, 510 and this duplication of ballots, I think that based on different things that were happening, and the scanner situation, the printer situation. Yeah, that maybe there are 510 errors, you know. And on election day, we know it was a 17% turnout for Democrats, much higher for Republicans. And so I think he's got the best chance of having a different outcome than anybody.
It is within 0.02 of a point. Now, I haven't gone back since 1912 to see if it is a close statewide race.
What have you been doing, Garrett?
Right? That seems to me like that's not something I would challenge. That seems like it's probably accurate, in which, you know, a statewide 0.02 of a point difference is probably the closest race since 1912.
Yes.
So, I do agree. I mean, we did a turnout. I'm with ABC 15. We did a turnout analysis on Maricopa County. And while Maricopa County did have higher than expected turnout in this last election, you can't quantify smaller numbers in any significant way. So if 1,000 people did step out of line and didn't vote, or something happened with their ballot, you know, those are numbers that obviously, if to be proven in court,
yes,
could benefit Hamadeh in the long run. But again, this is all...
It's all conjecture right now. We're going to have to wait to see how this plays out.
Yes, this is all conjecture. This is going to have to go through the court system. The Hamadeh lawsuit's probably the most, that's going to be the one that people are really going to be watching because of the closeness of that race. That's what happens there. And your guess is as good as mine at this point.
Yeah, and I do not have a crystal ball. They took it away a couple of years ago. I do remember Tom Horn, though, and Andrew Thomas, and that was 899 votes. And that took 3 weeks to adjudicate out of that after that primary. Yeah. And so I did live that through that one. And this is tough. So I really appreciate you coming on today. And thank you for your information. And we will be in touch. And thank you for everything that you do to help the state, Garrett. It's great to hear your voice.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye, Kathleen.
Bye. So we have a couple more weeks, and we're going to keep trying to bring you current information so that you have the facts, not the emotion. The emotion's good. We need our passion, but we also need to make sure that we're factual. And Lisa, you wanted to make a point before we...
Well, I'm going to make a... It's off topic, but it's on topic. So something most people don't know, and given what we've gone through the last couple of years with COVID, the fact of the matter is doctor error and hospital error annually, and this is prior to COVID, according to John Hopkins, killed 250 to 440,000 Americans a year. But what do you hear people get all hopped up about is gun deaths. Homicides last year in the United States was less than 20,000. Now, I'm not saying that,
right,
that's okay, but your risk of death by doctor is 10 times, actually more than 10 times your risk of death by homicide. Suicide, we'll push that aside there. So this is the kind of education people need to have before they go to the voting booth. People are more concerned about guns than what's going on with our government, and you need to be educated.
Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to parking lot that, and you and I will have that conversation coming up, and we are done for today. But I want to thank my guest, Lisa Von Gelderen. I want to thank Garrett Archer. And I want to thank you for listening. If you've got anything, any comments, questions, or feedback, Kathleen Wynn at wynntucson.us. This is Kathleen Wynn. Thank you for listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice. And we'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day.